All right, welcome to another episode of the Empowerment Perspective Podcast. I go by the name of Demiso Josie alongside
Spencer's here.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. It's a gloomy day in Pittsburgh. We're going to make the most out of it.
Yes, we are. Listen, I told you guys we're going to hit the road. Some of you didn't believe it. We are in Pittsburgh. Our first stop on our little mini tour that we got going on with the Empowerment Perspective. It does seem like it's like we're in Seattle right now. All of this rain and
we've been on the road first thing this morning. I was waiting for the sun. It never showed up.
Sun never showed up at all.
So does today count? If the sun doesn't come up, does the day count?
No, we're gonna get another day. So that we extend spring break a little bit.
That definitely works for me.
We might not get paid for that day, but we're gonna push spring break.
We got a contract.
True that. Yeah, we're gonna get into what's going on out there in Oklahoma too, and West Virginia with that in a little bit. But thoughts on our last podcast. We had Jason Polls on. We were talking about student athletes and the process of a student athlete in college. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, I think that prior to him even making a decision to play at that level, I think that he had a really strong support system. And because of that support system, had to make some really good decisions that were really beneficial to him and his family before he even got there.
It was good to see the, because we had Ms. Carter on a previous podcast, to see her response and then see his response and kind of see how it echoes and mirrors each other. So you get a chance, check that one out. It takes a village. And then we had the Real Men Wear Orange. I had to put a question mark on there because there's a fight between him and me with Syracuse and Temple University.
Dude, you guys got this petty thing going on.
Exactly, absolutely petty. Temple's the only university that matters to me right now.
Here's the other thing that he's really petty about. When he said he boxed up all that stuff and sent it to you and your wife.
That was
really petty.
So if you get a box at your door, I don't baby open
my
clothes
mail.
In
we talked about this. I don't even go to my mailbox. Listen, the other day, right, the guy left, I shouldn't say the guy, the mail person, they left a card saying that if I don't come get my mail at the mailbox, they're going to take everything away.
They're going to take it all away, huh?
They keep leaving me a bunch of flyers. I don't need that stuff.
I think we got the camera situation squared away, too. My dog isn't in the building, so we can't run and knock over the tripod. So hopefully we got everything worked out. But thanks for those who have watched that video on the Empowerment Perspective on YouTube. It's on the website as well. So our mission is to celebrate educators. Our mission is to spread the word of the wonderful things that people are doing in the world of education and beyond. So we are setting up this little tour, and we had to get a stop in Pittsburgh. And this is me being petty a little bit, because we got a LinkedIn account. I wanted to make sure that it worked properly. And I knew we were coming through Pittsburgh. And I said, we're going to break this trip up because I'm not driving 8 hours to Ann Arbor Street. So I'm going to stop in Pittsburgh. And I'm going to find somebody that's in the education field that's doing great things. Purely based off of what I saw on LinkedIn. So I reached out to this wonderful lady. And she responded. And I was like, this is amazing. This actually works.
Somebody actually pays attention to LinkedIn.
Right. Pays attention to LinkedIn. It's just not about getting a bunch of people to follow you and like you. So I would like to introduce Dr. Candace Robick to the podcast.
Welcome. Hi. Thank you. So glad to be with you today. Thanks for making the trip.
Awesome. Thanks for having us and taking a leap of faith, because you don't know us from Adam. We just met on LinkedIn. And I was like, Kareem, I hope this works out. And I hope she's not too afraid of us, because we are definitely not meaning any harm. We want all good. So thank you for having us on the show.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Know that you were a former English teacher. I know that you're doing some educational consulting. You are working in higher education, special education background. I can go on and on based upon what the little bit of time that we talked about it. But welcome to the show. And let's just start with what are you doing right now?
Presently, I'm working for Grand Canyon University, which is in Phoenix, Arizona, but I do live in Pittsburgh, as you said. And I'm lucky enough to be able to work with pre-service teachers, student teachers at the undergraduate and graduate level. And I also work with principal candidates at the graduate school level. And so I travel to many geographic locations. I'm in Allegheny County, I'm in Butler County, I'm in Clarion County, Ohio, and surrounding areas. It's really wonderful to be able to touch their lives and to coach them through the process to help them to maximize their potential.
Right. Let's talk about the students that you serve right now and versus the ones that you've done in the past. Have you seen a change in the type of students that you're getting now versus, a couple years ago?
The type of students now know that they need to be more competitive. But what I'm finding is that not all of the students are naturally skilled at special education concepts. as far as accommodations and modifications mm-hmm. and what that looks like. Mm-hmm. So differentiated instruction is mm-hmm. a large part of my coaching practice mm-hmm. and instruction when I'm working with them.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain differentiated instruction for the people that may not be in education to do followers?
Absolutely. So differentiated instruction is taking the concept of the lesson and basically taking it into 3 to 5 assignments based on your population in your class. Mm-hmm. It takes a very smart teacher to be able to look at his or her students mm-hmm. and look at your population to determine what is it they need and what is it they don't need. Mm, okay. Now, we all know sitting in this room mm. that not all students need the same things,
same thing, right?
And a lot of people refer to them as cookie cutter students. Mm, well, they're not cookie cutter students. Mm-hmm. They didn't come from the same mold. Mm. And that's what makes us all beautiful as humans. Mm. We're all different. Mm. So you take one assignment and you work it into 5 different derivations mm-hmm. so you can maximize the potential of each student in your classroom. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I mean, different students have different mm-hmm. potentials, different learning styles, different mm-hmm. multiple intelligences, mm-hmm. according to Howard Gardner, the researcher. Mm-hmm. And it's just a beautiful thing to see happen in your classroom.
You hit on something that we preach all the time. We talk about being students of your students. And I think that's really, really important in order for you to be able to service their needs and to figure out even what level that they of skill set that they have. I think a lot of I'm glad we're moving away from this cookie cutter approach a little bit. But I don't think all the educators have embraced this concept of, you know, being students of the students. And that's what, you know, when we went to Orlando, mm-hmm. that's what one of the things that we were talking about is that concept.
Mm-hmm. And you know why that happens, right?
No.
Basically, that happens because I think that teachers are naturally intelligent people. Mm-hmm. And I think that some people get too caught up in their brain and think, oh, well, this is how I learned this. Mm-hmm. And it takes that special person to be able to say, oh, I know I realize and know that I learned it this way, mm-hmm. but there are other people that have different talents and abilities, and they come from different walks of life mm-hmm. and have had different experiences, mm-hmm. which makes my point that you can reach anyone mm-hmm. in your classroom. Mm-hmm. You just have to be smart enough to know how to approach mm-hmm. them.
Even as a teacher, like, I hated monotony. I hated going and doing the exact same thing every single day. So I would stretch myself just so I wouldn't get bored. And I don't mm-hmm. understand, especially teachers who have been in the business for, you know, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you doing the same thing? There's, you know, technology is different. Mm-hmm. The students are different. Situations are different. Like, why are you continuing to do the same thing?
It's tough because I think that anytime, well, especially when it doesn't work. Mm. So it's one thing when you're doing the same thing and you actually can see the results. But if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again and you're getting the same result, you know, mm. they say that's the definition of insanity. Mm. Yeah. And being in a classroom with 25 students, you're doing the same thing that you did last year and the year before, and you're not trying anything different. Mm-hmm. Now what happens is that you get bored, students get bored, and then all these behaviors kick in. Mm. And now what happens is that you have to go and get additional resources. So instead of even trying it day one, now what happens is that we have to wait 30, 60, 90 days to try something that you should have tried day one, which is to be a student of your student.
That is true. And when you were in the classroom, well, you're still in the classroom, just different classroom. Have you had experiences? Actually, let's go back. Let's go back mm-hmm. to your first time going into the classroom.
That?
Like, tell us, everyone has a horror story. Like, mm-hmm. I remember I was in the classroom the first time, and I taught television production, and we had a science lab above us, and they were doing water displacement. Mm-hmm. So I'm just literally opening up all these computers and things, and I see all of this water just coming on top of my equipment. I'm running, taking stuff off of there. And then I had a kid that never tell me that your class is not real. You teach a fake class. And I said, all right, well, I'll take it. So tell us about the first time you stepped into a classroom.
The first time I stepped into a classroom would have been my student teaching experience, which was a number of years ago.
Was this at South Park?
Pardon?
Was this at South Park?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, because I was looking and I didn't know South Park was real. I thought it was a joke. But go ahead. Was Kenny in the classroom? No? Okay. Go ahead.
And so I started right off with seniors. And that particular year, and I won't say the name of the school, I was considered to be in a very favorable position because the school district was looked at as more or less a utopian school district, if you can say there is one. It was a blue ribbon school, okay. Et cetera, if you get my point. Mm-hmm. So anyway, during my student teaching, my master teacher said to me, I have never seen students like this before. We had students on drugs. We had students doing alcohol. It was just amazing because this had never happened before.
How did your master teacher know that you had all these things going on?
Well, because of the relationship that they had with the guidance counselors. And a lot of our students happen to be in the guidance counselor's office a lot of the time.
So kids come to you and tell you that they're on drugs? Because then I got to do my job.
That's a different office.
Okay.
That's a side word. That's not me.
I'm sorry.
I have to tell you, I'll be honest with you, I didn't feel prepared at all. I felt like I needed to be a social worker.
Yes.
Trained to be a guidance counselor.
Yes, keep going.
Something like that.
Lawyer.
Right. Yes. I mean, I needed to do all those things. There were a lot of kids that had eating disorders. There were kids that were violent towards their parents. And there were a lot of situations. We actually had a suicide. And unfortunately, that seems
all
to be
coming. All this on the first day?
Not all the first day.
All this on the first day? Man.
This was over a couple months period of time, but still.
She went home like, honey, I don't know if I can do it. There's just so much going on.
So anyway, you know what I did after I graduated from college? I had a teaching job to go to, but guess where I went? Straight to nursing school.
Really? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the same thing. You still got to be a psychologist when you're dealing with patients and then, you know, all these different hats that you have to wear. Why did you decide to go that route?
Excuse me. I decided to go.
That water that you have that nobody else has in the room.
I decided to go that route so I could learn more about my students and the situations that they were dealing with because I wanted to feel more qualified. I wanted to be more like an expert.
Okay.
And that's exactly what that gave me.
All right, so go back to that first day. I'm sorry, we kind of went off.
Did you go to the hospital where you're working in a medical office when you finished nursing school? Or
I worked in intensive care.
Wow. ICU. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But during my experience, 22-month experience in the nursing school, and, you know, I'm sure you know what my parents said when I did that, right? You're on your own.
Absolutely.
So I had to work my way through nursing school, but I loved it. I was able to work at Western Psych. I was able to do labor and delivery. I was able to work in the children's unit at Western Psych, eating disorder unit, you name it, schizophrenia.
Wow.
It was a fabulous experience. It was eye-opening.
Wow.
But I loved every minute of it.
Huh. So
which first day was better? Was it the first day that you had in school or the first day that you had in the ICU?
The first day that I had in my nurse's training and the first day in the ICU.
Which one were you prepared more for?
Nursing. Yes, because it was a clinical program at Chadysville Hospital of Pittsburgh. And, I mean, I believe that clinical programs have a lot to offer because I'm sure you heard of nurses, and you interviewed nurses a couple weeks ago, nurses that maybe do a four-year BSN program, and then nurses that go straight into clinical. I've actually met people that have completed their program, but they didn't know how much they would not care for the clinical part of things. Whereas in a clinical program, you're in the hospital within the first couple of weeks.
Right, a lot more hands-on in that.
Right.
That's really interesting.
Not to say anything negative about the BSN program, because it's great. You come out with a college degree, and the clinical nurses have to get that later.
So let me ask this. Do you think that we should probably copy that model?
I was just about to say that.
Where so that while you actually are working towards your degree, you're actually spending some time in the classroom before you can finish. So that if you don't like it or you don't think you have the heart for it, then you shouldn't be there.
Right. That's great. It's the schools that are proactive and have field experiences for the teachers. Those are the best programs because you get right in there and you start immediately.
Right.
So, yes, it's a good model to follow.
Yeah, I went alternate route. So I went from TV to really being in a classroom. Then I had classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I was like, I'm not learning anything in here. There's hierarchy and all this other stuff. It wasn't practical.
Okay.
Like I mean, I got it. I understood the philosophy behind it, but it wasn't something that I could use every single day in my classroom when I got kids telling me that my class don't matter or they, you know, they're hungry and they, you know, or this one's strung out on whatever. That stuff is a little bit, I think we should throw them in there first year. You should have one semester. Let's put you in a classroom with obviously an aide to guide you to see if you really, really, really are about teaching and education.
Because part of my practicum is that I actually had opportunity to go and be inside the actual school. And we had Harvey when I told you that's how I cut my teeth being in there in an alternative school. So, and this was an alternative high school. And again, you're talking about kids that have really given up hope and really just showed up because it was something to do in the morning until everybody else got home.
Was that when you first started losing your hair? You got a little stressed out when he was in there?
That was actually on his way out before even that. So I started balding. Way before that, I started balding.
That's interesting. So why did you decide to get into education in the first place?
Well, actually, if you want to know when I first became interested in teaching was when I was four years old.
Like 1, 2, 3, 4?
Exactly, 1, 2, 3, 4.
You got to put up 5 fingers, though. You got to put up 5 fingers.
I wanted a slate board that I could write on with chalk, and I used to run classes for the neighborhood.
What do you mean?
I used to run reading classes. I used to teach kids the alphabet. I did.
Wait a minute. Time.
Yes.
Were these other four-year-olds, were they older? Like, what age range are we talking
about? I think these are doll babies that she had. That she just, you know,
you pulling a string in the air. So what age range were we talking that came to? I'm fascinated by this.
Just different kids that were my age that didn't know their alphabet. And I love teaching it.
That's crazy.
I mean, and I did that pretty much all the way up and through elementary school.
You were a tutor starting at the
I know.
Four.
Mm.
I worked with my sister a lot, too, so it was just something that was part of my life.
Did the parents pay you? You were doing a service.
No.
I did
it for fun.
Wow. That's how you love something. You're doing it for fun. Yes.
Right.
I don't think I could do that. The kids in my neighborhood would have laughed at me.
Have to keep up the image, right?
Yeah. So, that's amazing. So you do a lot of work consulting, solutions-based learning, correct?
Yes.
Can you talk about what that is and what you do with that?
So solutions-based learning is a business that was created out of my husband and I's desire for me to stay home and raise the children. Mm-hmm. So I left healthcare administration, and I had my children back-to-back, and I thought, I need a business that I can run when I'm at home.
Mm.
So I started a tutoring business and was picked up through Pennsylvania's program through Governor Rendell, Classroom Plus. Mm. And that was a very selective tutoring program. And they had you complete a 20 or 25-page application.
Mm.
And you had to show your data.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you all know, because you're in education, about the Foresight test.
Mm-hmm.
And Foresight was very popular at one point in time. And so the tutors had to purchase that test and show how successful they were at math and reading. So I was selected. You had to apply every year. You had to submit your data to show the growth that your students achieved. So I've been at this since 2000, the early 2000s, and my business really skyrocketed through Classroom Plus. They sent a flyer out to all of the people in the area that had children that were not proficient, that were below the 50th percentile in math and reading, and my name was the only tutor in this area.
Wow.
So the one summer I had 60 students on my caseload.
They were all recommendations from when she was four.
Absolutely. She does good work.
She does good work.
It goes way back. Yes, that's correct. That's so I had to show the data, and so the data showed that if I spent 13 one-on-one hours with the students, that they would progress two grade levels in math and in reading.
Really? For every 13, you get two grade levels?
Every 13 hours of one-on-one, yes.
Oh, wow.
Those are my statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's amazing. Yeah.
So learning is a science, and if you break the code, I've broken the code, I know how to do it, and I work with students in all subjects.
Mm-hmm.
So last summer I decided, well, this is working so well for students. It's working so well for parents, because I've done a lot of coaching for parents as far as when they're pursuing homeschooling instances, or how showing them and coaching them on how to teach a particular curriculum, or how to teach their children how to write, and many other situations.
Mm-hmm.
So coaching for students, for parents, and then I expanded and rebranded my business this summer to include school systems and corporations. Because I can walk into a corporation or a school, work with an administrator, work with a teacher, and show them how to improve their practice.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Sounds a lot like what we're getting into.
Absolutely.
A little bit.
That's really impressive.
A little bit different, but yeah, absolutely. We have a running question on our show of asking people what their why is. Mm-hmm. We try to reach our students, and a lot of them, we ask them why you come to school, mm-hmm. and they'll say stuff like to learn.
Yeah. So when you asked her about the running question, you know she got nervous.
I know. We're not going to do that. You're not going to have your time to say that, the petty question.
She's nervous.
We're not going to do that.
So every time we ask this question to a student, right, everybody gives the same answer. So when you're talking about a cookie cutter, when you ask a student why they're there, they'll give you the reason that a teacher told them they was in school. So they didn't even say, I'm here because I want to learn social studies, math, science, but they'll never give you their individual why.
Right, and a lot of teachers, we ask the question to a lot of teachers too, and they don't really know their why. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know why you're into something and you don't have that motivation, when those dark times come, it's easy for you to quit, and it's easy for you to give up. So what is your why? What drives you to do what you're doing?
Well, my burning desire and my why is to help students start thinking about what type of career that they'd like to pursue. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking at any age. We're career and college ready in all of our school systems in this area and beyond. And students need to be able to think in kindergarten, what is it that they're interested in? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? So I believe that the teacher is the key individual, the one that helps to mold the student and help them to encourage them and to help them think about the things that they do well and the things that they need to improve on, and some things that they might want to pursue later on in life.
Absolutely.
Which causes me to show you my research. This is my research. Oh, this is my PhD that I published, and it's about transition. Okay. So everyone at the table knows that with the individual education plan, the transition is a mandatory component by the child's 14th birthday.
Mm. So you're telling me now that you are in favor of every kid having an
individual
education.
I was going to ask that question.
Education.
Every child. Not just the special education children, where it's documented, but every child.
I knew there was a reason why I liked her.
Right.
It's interesting.
And you have to think of these opportunities because whatever you expose your students to or your children to in life, that's who makes them become who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's that volunteer experience at the hospital that they are able to apply for at age 11 or 12, running an escort service in the hospital as far as transferring patients to different testing, to different departments, developing customer service skills, hands-on experiences. Hands-on experiences in the school system.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to have students work in the cafeteria, to pass out trays if they're using trays, or to be in charge of the recycling or the disposal process in the cafeteria. Teaching honest-to-goodness skills that will transfer over into the career world.
All right. So we talked about differentiated instruction. Mm-hmm. How can you not, on some level, have an individual education plan if you're differentiating your instruction for these kids? To me, it kind of goes hand-in-hand if you really, really think about it.
Well, even when... when parents send their kids to school, you should have a plan for your son or daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just can't just send them and say, okay, I see you at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to actually have a plan for them so that every day when they arrive, they know they're working towards something.
Mm-hmm.
So that one day at a time, that one step at a time goal becomes a reality because every day is going to get you a step closer to whatever it is that you're trying to get to.
Right. Yeah. So it's a true statement. I was going to go somewhere. I had a follow-up question. I can't remember what it was now. So I'm just going to move on because I can't remember. I'm getting old. It's been a long drive. Sorry.
I offered to drive. He said he got it.
So. Yeah. You know how you get comfortable and you just keep rolling,
Yeah.
And
I was happy that you were comfortable. I was comfortable too.
So you did a lot of work in urban education, correct?
Yes.
Why did you choose to use that area to focus on?
Well, basically... if you want to find the most underserved populations, it's typically in the urban school. And so I thought if I've been blessed with these skills and talent and a certain level of expertise, then I should be using it to my fullest potential. And so for me, that was working with urban populations where they might not have people that are invested in learning science or people that are interested in going to that area. So I have a heart. I have a heart for the students.
Okay.
And it's important for me to teach them how to read. I'm also a reading specialist besides a special educator.
Reading specialist, math specialist, scientist, astronaut.
You know, can you say some jobs for other people, please? She's the reason why the economy is messed up. The unemployment rate is so high because she has all the jobs. Yeah.
So basically, the students in high school were not able to read. And
how is that possible?
Well, it can happen if they don't have the right programs in place. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen different things where students fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. There's been some literature. Joe Torgerson wrote an article on children falling through the cracks. And you just have to have the right programs in place. Mm. And you have to go back and look at when students were learning to read, what were the literacy components that were in place. Did you have a program that incorporated the five essential components to reading? Mm. Phonics, phonemic awareness, vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension. Mm. If you didn't have a comprehensive program and the teachers didn't maintain fidelity to that program, then you're not going to have successful students. So if you design intervention groups, which a lot of schools are very, very proficient at doing that, or should I say advanced. Some schools are, but not all schools are. And so you have to employ the correct individuals to make sure that all of these variables are in place.
Right. So let me ask, would you suggest that we start putting more energy and effort into that third grade year? Because I think that's the biggest transition. What would you say earlier?
I would say earlier because when I went to school, reading wasn't a main focus in kindergarten. It was more of a social program. Now it's more academic. So I would say that reading readiness, early intervention, reading readiness is key. The goal is to have students reading by the second semester of their kindergarten year.
That's deep.
Right. So if the students are not meeting the benchmarks at that point in time, then you have to design interventions that work. But when I say interventions, a lot of people will lightly think interventions. I want to make sure that I say today that they're research-based interventions.
Okay.
And that there's a scientific approach. I know both of you follow data a lot. And so utilizing data to inform instructional practice is key.
Right. And how do we make that connection with parents? Me and my partner talk about this all the time, that the system right now, let's take mathematics, for example, and the new math that's out.
Right.
So we have a lot of parents that don't know and understand new math to be able to help, you know, their children.
Right.
So, you know, we talk about certain reading programs and leveling students and those things, too. There's still a disconnect with the parents. So I'm sending the child home, and, you know, I sit with my daughters all the time. I understand it. My wife understands it. But the average person or average parent will struggle, and they're not able to help their child. So how do we bridge that gap?
That's a good question that you've posed. And I would say that in a lot of school systems, we don't have enough parent engagement. If you have parent engagement, I like to think of a model where it's home, school, community. If you design something like that, that would be your answer. So to address specifically what you mentioned about the new math, you would need to design a peer tutoring program, something internal. But you could also have, there are a lot of people that volunteer from a variety of organizations, such as OASIS, that's an organization in the city of Pittsburgh. There are, for reading situations, there are literacy initiatives. And you can have those people come into the school and help the students. But to help the parents, I've been part of, when I worked in administration as an assistant principal and a special ed director, there are different different efforts that you can employ in the school where you have parents come in and you have teachers run it or you have administrators run it where you present the curriculum and you give them active tools. Show them how to use the technology on the computer because we know that sometimes the kids are more savvy than the parents are. And go through it with them and show them exactly what the expectations are and teach them the conceptualizations. I find that it's really good and a lot of parents are very interested and they're willing to learn. And they want to know. So I think that as school systems, we should embrace those parents that are interested in accelerating their students. I've also developed Saturday or weekend tutoring programs, and I've run some different things within solutions-based learning to promote these.
I think one of the major keys that schools need to understand is that a lot of the community needs to see the school as an asset to them. And if you're not going out to reach that community, then, you know, a lot of these parents, I'll talk specifically about, you know, the population that we serve, they already have this us versus them mentality. So when they don't feel like there's an asset, why am I coming to the school? I had my own bad experiences with it. I don't like teachers. I don't like the educational system. So why am I coming to school? So now I can't even help my child. I'm just sending them to school because I have to. The law is telling me to do so.
Well, I have to do what better? Better yet, I don't like you because I had you.
Yeah.
And I know how you treated me.
Yeah, that's coming too. Or you treated my youngest child.
Yes.
You know, hey, we got this situation coming up again.
So perception.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, perception and also the actual experience. So we a lot of times, and even in urban populations, is that they never leave the environment because they don't have the money to. A lot of parents would definitely move and live somewhere else if they had the financial ability to. So now what happens is that I'm stuck, and you having to go to schools that I went to, you have to have the teachers that I had, because a lot of teachers work 25, 30 years. They don't go nowhere. So I can have a child, they can come through the same exact system I went through, and if I had a really bad experience, now I have to face you, and I already know that what you're telling me is not true because what you did to me. So it becomes like a student that's scorned almost.
Yeah. I'm going to transition to the concept of the school to prison pipeline. That is my, you know, dissertation.
Can I make one more comment?
Yeah,
okay, before we transition, I wanted to mention that a lot of successful schools have implemented math evenings and literacy evenings, where you bring the parents in for a, it's thought of as a social and fun event, but it's actually educational. And I think that it makes the parents feel like they belong. And you prepare different folders with different educational tips to help them to accelerate their students. And you give them technology tips and tools to reference in the handouts that you prepare for that event. So I just wanted to mention that.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the school going to the community, though. I don't think we do it enough, specifically where we are, and reaching out to those parents within the community. Whether you're going to the local churches, community center, or, you know, there's a block party, I think we need to focus more on reaching out to the community. We always want them to come to us. And like I said, it goes back to them. If we don't feel like it's an asset, then why am I going into that building? So I think we need to start bridging that gap and going out into the community. Like I said, I wanted to transition to this concept of school to prison pipeline, because it's all kind of blended in together for me, because we can talk about retention rates. We can talk about even preparing our students for college. Matter of fact, let's go there for a second. We're talking about that transition from high school to college. And a lot of our students aren't prepared for college, because I think a part of it is a perspective and the way that we're teaching them. When you get to college, you're sort of expected to, you know, think for yourself. Like, you know, they want to know what you think. Whereas in high school and in you know, elementary and middle school, we are giving our kids, you know, they need to regurgitate what they hear. They're not learning that process of thinking for themselves. Can you speak on that transition from high school to college and how schools can prepare their kids better for college?
Well, again, I'm going to start off with the foundational special ed process. As a special ed case manager in a school system, you are expected to make sure that you do a SAP plan for the student. And you do that during their senior year, usually the spring of their senior year. And that plan is a document that follows the student and helps them to get accommodations and modifications in their next education, whether it be a community college, whether it be a four-year college, etc. That advocacy that comes from that, that coaching and that advocacy that case managers do with our special education students, and something that they've been doing the whole time that student's been on their caseload. And I was blessed at one of my school districts to have students on my caseload for just about, not the same all the time, but I had the same students for 6 years. Because I was teaching 5 through 12. So I got to see them through. I think that if we incorporate the development of those advocacy skills, of telling people what it is that you need, and also developing exposure, job shadows, that's something I did on a regular basis in special ed. If that could be incorporated into the regular ed population, that would be fabulous. I think the development of those programs would help that. But just looking at what we had talked about earlier, transition and transition in the schools, career and college ready, there are a lot of software programs, and I'm sure you're familiar.
Yes.
As a guidance counselor, mm-hmm. one that comes to mind is Bridges. Mm-hmm. And Bridges has programs from grade 7 up through mm-hmm. 12. And having kids develop a career portfolio, mm-hmm. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. There's another one called Naviance that Naviance a lot of schools...
Naviance is good, as well as New Jersey Can. That's what we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you have the students interacting with that, but you notice I'm just saying students, mm-hmm. the parents also have to be involved. Mm-hmm. I know with Naviance, you want to incorporate the parent population into the development of that career portfolio mm-hmm. and have a nice feedback session with the guidance mm-hmm. counselor just to make mm-hmm. sure that everyone's on track mm-hmm. and that no one's falling through mm-hmm. the cracks. I believe that that would be something that would be mm-hmm. fulfilling.
Well, I'll say this. When it comes to college and career readiness, a lot of times what happens is that the perception, I'll say, is we don't have to start that until 11th grade. I hear that all the time. Like, you want to wait all these years and let all these years go by. You want to wait until 11th grade to actually start thinking and becoming really serious about college. Mm-hmm. My point of view has always been we need to start that day one.
Day one, absolutely.
Because it's a process to get to 11th grade.
Right.
And just like with anything else in life, if you don't know the rules, you don't know what you're working towards,
right.
then when you finally get there, you may realize that you're short. Mm-hmm. So 11th grade, they're looking at your grades in 9th grade and 10th grade. Mm-hmm. So, and even in middle school, we're looking at 6, 7, 8 to get you in the classes that you need to have in high school. Mm. But before that, you have 4th and 5th grade to get you in the classes that you need for 6th grade.
Right.
And you have kindergarten, 1st, 2nd, 3rd to get you in the class. So it's always, it's a process.
Yeah.
And you can't just say that I'm going to wait until he or she is 16 years old or 17 years old because then it's too late.
Mm. I take it on a little bit more of a practical level, and especially for the parents out there. Stop waiting. If your kid, if you know what your child wants to do in their mm-hmm. life already, there's probably, I'm going to say, argue maybe 8 to 10 professions where you actually have to have a certification in order mm-hmm. to do stuff. So if they want to be a businessman, why don't you foster that right now? Mm-hmm. And then what you'll do, what happened to me is when I went to engineering camp, 11th grade, and mm-hmm. I didn't have no business going there, but I spent anyway. But when I came out of there and it was such hands-on and we were developing, you had to come up with a product. Mm-hmm. And our group was a voice-activated car stereo system. And I remember when I gave this presentation, and the guy, he sits here, he was right to the left, and he said, that'll never, ever work. And here we are. Everything's voice-activated, right? But what that class did to me was it math started to make sense to me. English started to make sense. Like, all of the parts started to fit in mm-hmm. Because I had a vision, and I knew kind of the direction that I wanted to go into. But parents, if your child wants to do something, you should mm-hmm. be feeding it right now. Like, mm-hmm. my youngest wants to be a vet, so guess what? We're working on the body parts of the animals and mm-hmm. things of that nature right now. The older one wants to be, she don't know what she wants to do. She wants to do teaching, the ballet, mm-hmm. guide, pumps up gas and all that. So I said, well, you can't be the guy that pumps up gas. You're taking it too far. But you need to feed your children. Like, there's no reason why they can't be businessmen or women on some level mm-hmm. at the age of 13, 14. Like, why not? You don't want to be a photographer? Go take pictures. Mm-hmm. You want to make movies? Go make movies.
Yes.
There's no excuse as to why you can't be getting those kids on that level. And I think that mm-hmm. transitions into school, because you'll
Absolutely.
Now they'll understand, oh, I need to do this because I understand why I need to learn history, because mm-hmm. there's a history behind the thing that I want to mm-hmm. want to do.
Yes.
So stop waiting, parents, and make sure that you get them on board and feed them early.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other programs in schools, VOTEC programs, mm-hmm. and I want to make sure that I mention that today, because a lot of people think, oh, well, my child has to go to community college for 2 years or they mm-hmm. have to go to a 4-year school. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of information that I passed to my students, and mm-hmm. I would make sure that they attended orientations when they were in 9th grade mm-hmm. to see if they would be interested in becoming a roofer or mm-hmm. a construction mm-hmm. worker. And there are a lot of unions that support these trades, mm-hmm. and the trades can be a wonderful career for mm-hmm. someone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I support all of them. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of schools around here that have student-run businesses in the school system, mm-hmm. which I support also. I think that kudos to them mm-hmm. For going above and beyond, mm-hmm. for having a greenhouse and selling herbs that mm-hmm. the students have grown themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And kudos to the people that are selling baked goods and mm-hmm. food products and having students help in their cafeteria.
It's crazy. And I wish we would use social media a little bit more impactful. And I say that because we're living in a time right now from a business perspective where I can post something on Facebook and it's free advertisement. Like, I could go across the world and spread my message across the world and, you know, sell products across the world. Like, the borders are no longer, I have to go to a physical store to buy your stuff. So leveraging that space and leveraging, and the kids already know how to navigate it.
Yes.
So we need to just channel their energy in the right direction so that they can feel empowered and use it correctly. And then I think we'll get a better product of students. I think, you know, we'll be in a better place, you know, as a nation as a whole. But I think a lot of the adults and a lot of the people that are in our lives are holding these kids back, and we shouldn't. We need to, my philosophy, the school just need to simply teach these kids problem solving skills, you know, and obviously how to get along with people and stuff like that. But once you develop and wire your brain so that you're able to solve problems, you'll be able to put anything in front of a child, and they should be able to at least navigate it or at least figure out a way to get the right answer. So it goes back to that concept of learning to think for themselves and not just regurgitate back what they've been taught. I think that would go a long way in education.
I agree with you 100%, and I like that you brought up STEM education. I had the opportunity to complete an externship through Asset STEM Education in August.
Oh, okay.
And the corporation that chose me to work with them was Alcoa. And I worked at Alcoa and had an opportunity.
You have another job?
Pardon?
You have another job?
No, no, it was an externship. It was professional development, right.
I don't think you had another job.
I got to step my game up.
And we met with the CEO of Alcoa, and we asked, what type of skills are you looking for in students? And they're looking for critical thinking, thinking outside the box, problem solving, as you mentioned, writing skills, signs of that students are able to organize, basic computer skills, and communication skills. Those are some of the key things that they would like students to possess.
Because that's some of the things that we do every day in school.
Definitely. Definitely. And I was just fascinated by that conversation. I mean, spot on. Those are those are the skills that the students need. And I think as educators and as administrators, we need to empower and foster that in the students.
Absolutely. I want to get into some of your work. I know you said you were an author and things, and you wrote some things. Can you talk about any things that are out there?
Did you bring anything for us, the books?
Yes, yes. I brought my publication of my dissertation, and it's called A Phenomenological Study, Parent, Guardian, and Special Education Student Perceptions of Transition Beyond High School. And that was published in 2010, and so it's...
I'm getting shaking right now because I'm about to go on that journey. I was like, hold on.
It's about 200 pages that you can read in your spare time. It's also available online. And then...
where can they find that online?
Recently, I was published by Grand Canyon University. Is inclusion the appropriate practice for all schools? And they just picked up that.
Is that an article that you have? Or?
Yes, yes. Okay. I have that with me.
Is inclusion the appropriate...
So I am going to be publishing a lot more, but these are the first two things that I've done. And actually, the students and parents that I followed in that, I've been thinking of doing a longitudinal study to revisit and see where they are in the process with the education that they received.
Let's go back to your article. What was the results? Is inclusion good or is no good?
I believe in inclusion. That's my viewpoint. And basically, in the article that I wrote, that I believe that students with disabilities should be integrated and mainstreamed into the classroom, all going along with least restrictive environment, and the Gaskin Law. I think it's important to develop and enhance the students because you think when you think about it, when they graduate from their program, their high school program, whether it be 18 or 21, depending upon the disability, they have to be integrated into society, right?
Absolutely.
So there's no time like the present. As long as they can be accommodated in the mainstream, I think that, you know, co-teaching is a fabulous venue and should support that student if they need a paraprofessional or an education assistant. They call them different names in different school systems. Then I think that that should be provided.
At the end of the day, I feel like what we are doing is teaching kids life skills. The subject matter is just a vehicle to do that. So mm-hmm. that life skills might look different depending on the person that you obviously are teaching. So mm-hmm. that obviously that the inclusion piece, it makes sense, along with everyone having their own individual education plan to
Absolutely. Now, you referenced Seabiscuit, and we love movies. I didn't see Seabiscuit. Can you tell me about it?
Well, that was about a horse that basically was not well-respected. Okay. And you know how people make judgments based on mm-hmm. sizes? Mm-hmm. Seabiscuit was judged. Mm-hmm. And they said that the horse would never be able to achieve success. And Seabiscuit proved them wrong.
It's interesting because I've heard parents and students complain about that same statement made towards them.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Undersized, overlooked.
Mm.
It happens. Mm. It happens in school. Mm-hmm. It happens in sports. You mentioned you interviewed someone that was a coach
mm-hmm.
recently.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's crazy.
It is.
I think we have to invest in our students, and we have to show them that they can be an advocate for themselves. But mm-hmm. as teachers, too, we have to be an advocate for them, too. There are some students that you'll get that you know don't have the wherewithal. They don't have the confidence
mm-hmm.
or the self-esteem. But I always saw it as my responsibility to try to instill that in them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it comes from them not being able to share how they feel when they're not able to solve that mm-hmm. math problem, or they're not able to read a passage. Mm-hmm. And so it's the astute teacher that's very analytical mm-hmm. that looks and says, oh, well, if I was able to get the student to do that or tell them, it's okay
mm-hmm.
to feel a certain way about that, but we're going to change that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's important to always tell your students, and I think you alluded to this earlier, is that it's as much of an experience for me as a teacher in the classroom as it mm-hmm. is for my students. And mm-hmm. I always tell my students that it's a safe place to learn
mm-hmm.
and that I'm learning right there with
them. Right.
I can't even tell you how many of my students have taught me so many things over mm-hmm. the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's been mm-hmm. quite valuable. And I always tell them it's a give and take.
Mm-hmm. Every day I walk into my office, even as an assistant principal, and I tell my, especially the young ladies, this every time. I said, every time I have a conversation with somebody, I'm trying to learn something from them. Yes. So when I talk to the young ladies, I said, I have two young daughters at home. So I'm, at some point, they're going to be 14, 15 years old. This conversation is going to come back. So I'm actually mm-hmm. learning from them in every single process that I take. And then, you know, we have, especially our schools, it's so diverse. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, you know, relate to everybody based off of your background. So there is a learning process that needs to, mm-hmm. to go into teaching. You need to be able to expand your horizons. And I don't know, I look forward to those moments more so than me teaching a lesson. I'm just one that's just always trying to soak up information and try to learn it and mm-hmm. then use it against my daughters later.
That's petty.
It is petty. We're not going to bring up okay. petty. We're not going to talk about petty.
I was letting you know that's petty. That's
How can people get in contact with you in terms yes. of your business?
They can reach me at https colon two forward slashes solutionsbasedlearning.com.
Okay. And then especially our audience, hopefully we're growing in the Pittsburgh area after this trip. So make sure that you check out Dr. Robick out there and the wonderful things that she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But before we let you go, we do have to ask you some questions.
All right.
We'll take it easy on you.
Okay.
You mentioned the movie.
Yes.
What was the last movie that made you cry?
Well, there are actually two, if I'm able.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Okay.
You're not going to cry now, are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
I might.
The greatest.
I don't know if you heard last. I had a traumatic experience, so I have to make sure that anytime somebody starts crying, I want to make sure you're not going to get sick.
No, I promise.
Okay. All right. I'm sitting across the desk, too, so I'm good. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My two favorite most recent movies were The Greatest Showman on Earth, that talks about the Barnum and Bailey story.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
And the second one would be the story of I Can Only Imagine, that was written by Mercy Me, and it's the life story of the gentleman that wrote the song, and it parallels his life.
Mm.
And yes, those were two movies that were
I highly
recommend.
The second one I haven't heard of. I heard it was about the song, and I never seen the movie, though.
Well, the second one I mentioned is newer, I Can Only Imagine.
You said that's Mercy Me?
Mercy Me, right.
Last movie I cried was Planet of the Apes. I just watched that with my daughters because it was such a terrible movie. I was like, I don't know why I'm wasting my time watching this movie.
I could be doing so many other things.
I'm wasting time. This is quality time with my daughters. Research says that the average father only spends 8 minutes of quality time with their children.
Per day?
Per day.
Or that's just general, like eight, that's all you get is eight
that's
minutes.
That's 8 minutes per day. And I didn't believe it at first. And I was like, this is impossible. But then when I started really thinking about it, we're talking about quality time, like where no TV, you're actually just one-on-one interaction with it. Mm-hmm. Like during the week, I can easily see that. Especially, you know, I'm doing 1,000 mm-hmm. things and I go home and after dinner, after all that, I probably have like 8 minutes and then they go to bed and then it's a wrap. It's really interesting.
What number should that be? Should it be higher than
it should be way. I thought it was going to be way more than that.
Well, it should be higher than what teachers are spending with kids, right?
Absolutely.
You would think.
You would think.
I would hope.
How much time teachers actually spending without?
Well, each class period is about 45 minutes, but then if you're looking at double reading blocks or double math blocks, that's 90 minutes.
It also depends on the teacher.
That's not 101, though.
They got to be talking to the kids, though. Sometimes I'll sit back in the back of the room.
Yeah.
I'm sort of bored. I'm just going to sit here.
Filing their nails. And, yeah.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Clipping coupons and stuff?
No.
We don't do that in education.
No.
I've seen that in the movie.
In the movie.
Yeah, the movie called Bad Teacher, yes. Correct. Yes. Yes.
They got that from somewhere, though. The idea did just come out of left
field. They did some research?
They did some research.
That's way back.
How about music? Who are you listening to?
Well, I like classical music. Mm-hmm. It's tried and true. And your, you know, typical show tunes.
Mm. What do you mean, show tunes? Wait. Show tunes?
My wife loves them.
Show tunes, Broadway.
Broadway.
Okay, can you say
Porgy and, Porgy and Bess?
Ooh, okay.
You have to understand where my
summertime,
mind.
You know.
Just how my mind works. When you
Ella
say
Fitzgerald.
Tunes, you say show tunes, I'm thinking that you're like listening to like the intros of like Tom and Jerry or something like
Seinfeld.
That.
Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
No.
Sits in the car, listen to show tunes. Right?
We just listened to Fresh Prince on the way up here.
Did you know that was a full song?
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air opened. Born West Philadelphia, born and raised. It's a whole entire song.
You never seen the show? It came on back in the 90s?
No, I've heard of
Will
it.
Will Smith? Oh, okay.
I like
it's a whole entire song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't know it was a full song.
Will Smith, we need you on the podcast. Yes. I see you out there posting wonderful things. So anybody know Will Smith, send them this link. Yes. We need him on the podcast. We'll fly out to wherever you are and get you on the podcast.
So, getting back to music.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Blues, Microtherapy, if I need to relax. Chill, and then my students' influence, really like hip-hop, because I like to dance, soft rap, and electronic beat.
What kind of, listening to in a way, what kind of dances do you do? What kind of hip-hop dances do you do?
What kind?
Yes.
The ones I can handle.
That's just two-stepping all day. That's what we do it here. Unless I do the same thing.
I was trying to see how far she's going to go in.
The percolator and all that, yeah, I can't do all that. The hit the quan, all that. Nah,
maybe can do it. I might not know the terminology.
I can't dance, so I'll be the first one.
That's why you two-step all day.
All day, yes. Depending on how fast it meets.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll sit against the wall. I won't even, you know.
Play the wall?
Yeah, play the wall. So, we're out here in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And you mentioned something about a riverfront or riverwalk or something.
Waterfront.
I knew waterfront. It was something. Okay. Like, what is there? I know we need to get a Permanis Brother sandwich while we're out here.
Oh, I can show you. That's in the strip district.
Yeah, we're going to
that's
go
the guy with the Roethlisberger sandwich?
Is that the Roethlisberger sandwich? I don't think
these are theme sandwiches?
The Permanis sandwich, the tradition in Pittsburgh is to get your meat and cheese. And then you have coleslaw on top.
Okay.
And the sandwiches are about this tall.
All right, doctor, here's the thing. All right. I don't eat no pork.
Okay.
All right. I don't eat beef.
Okay.
And I don't eat mayonnaise.
So you could probably get a vegetarian one.
A vegetarian burger.
I don't like vegetables either.
What do you eat?
Then you can eat the bread with a coleslaw.
There you
well,
go.
I don't know. Do you do coleslaw? You don't like veggies?
The mayonnaise.
No, I can't
do it. Is the O still there?
Maybe you could eat bread.
What kind of bread? Like garlic bread?
It's like a French bread that the Permantis use.
We're going to eat Permantis like Brothers while we're down here.
A thick Italian bread.
A thick Italian bread.
And then we're going to go to the O and get some French fries if it's still
what's
there.
The original.
Yeah,
that's in Oakland by the University
we're
of Pittsburgh.
We're going to Oakland.
I thought you said Oakland. Like, we're going to Oakland?
No, we're not flying to Oakland right now.
All
right,
so what kind of French fries they have? I eat French fries.
I am not a French fry connoisseur.
They're just good.
Just ketchup, is it? You don't
eat fries at all.
All right. What about pizza? They have good pizza here?
I don't eat pizza either.
Okay.
Mm. It's like I'm talking to myself.
Yeah, I'm about to say. That's what I was like to say. No conversation.
Turkey burger. Can I get a good turkey burger?
He had a bad experience with a turkey. Was it black bean burger?
Black, yeah. Somebody, I don't know who Darlene recommended. But we're hungry, and they find food they can eat really easy. Why don't you try a black bean burger? I wanted a regular turkey burger. I couldn't eat a turkey burger, but you never mind, though.
So you eat turkey.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that it? Just turkey?
Chicken.
Chicken.
Yes. And fish. You don't eat fish?
Is there any good fish places here?
Oh, absolutely. At the waterfront, they have a good place. It's called Mitchell's.
Mitchell's.
Right, Mitchell's Seafood Restaurant.
Mitchell's Seafood. Okay. Here,
now he's going to sponsor us. Now we're naming all these places on our podcast. So I'm going to come call in the Empowerment Perspective podcast. We'll call you.
Absolutely.
And ask for some money for sponsorships. But,
matter of fact, how about if anybody's listening, go and just say that, I heard about Empowerment Perspective.
There it is. We'll take that as a sponsorship.
You get a discount. Tom, you said that you heard it here and you're getting a discount.
Mm. So last question, what is Pittsburgh known for other than being a still city and the Three Rivers? And is there something, a staple that we need to go see while we're here?
Well, you might want to go down to the Point.
That's different from the waterfront.
The rivers come together, right? You know, Pittsburgh's shaped like a triangle.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay. And a thing that I recommend that you would probably have a lot of fun with if it's done raining is the Go Ducky Tours.
Mm.
It actually is a land and water tour.
Mm.
It looks like a duck, and then the wheels fold in, and then it floats on the river.
He's petty. You can't. They say that. We're going to do the incline. How about that?
What's that?
Everybody
yes,
has to,
by
everybody
Station
has to go
Square.
To,
yeah. They have the Bessemer steel coal pot on display, and then the incline goes up to Mount Washington.
So you know how when we come, you know how we come in.
No, it's a motorized car.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes up tracks.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get to the restaurant?
Well, you know how
there are lots of fish restaurants on Mount Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So when we was coming in, you know, the city was on to the right, and you saw that big old cliff of houses and things. Mm-hmm. Incline kind of takes you up to that level there.
Okay.
So Pittsburgh is definitely a cool city. I like it. Mm-hmm. I don't know about living here because the weather is a little crazy. But I don't know how you drive in the snow with all these hills and these mountains out here. I don't understand that. You better have some good brakes.
Well, we learned when we were 16, so we've been doing it for
16?
A number of years.
You guys start driving here at 16?
Mm-hmm. Everyone does, right?
No.
Yeah. No. You weren't allowed?
Permit at 16, right?
You can drive if you want, but if you get pulled over, it's on you.
You can be 7. I remember it was a 9-year-old that stole a bread truck.
Any last words of wisdom for our teachers and parents that
we
have?
I do have a question.
Oh, yeah, he has one more.
Are you petty?
He said we weren't going there. Don't answer that question.
Well.
Don't do it.
He's going to say
he's gonna, it's okay.
My students would say that I am for English grammar.
Hmm. Mm.
Interesting.
Yes.
How so? Give me an example.
How
of your pettiness.
Well, you know, as an English teacher, you must make sure that they're using proper usage and that punctuation is where it's supposed to be. And, of course, that spelling is correct.
Did you use a red pen when you were marking
up
the paper?
Never. That's a psychological faux pas.
I used to do that on purpose.
Now, what about refusing to grade a paper until they fix all the errors?
Mm.
No, I would never do that. I'm not that type of teacher.
Hmm.
Would you consider that being petty? Like, you just won't grade me for what I have?
I have a professor like that now.
Just won't grade your paper?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She tore my last paper up. Granted, I only wrote it in like 2 hours because I was running behind, but
Is it petty to always have to use turn it in?
Would you submit
the paper?
No, it's necessary because there are a lot of students that do plagiarize.
It's petty.
Submit the paper because you want to plagiarize.
I'm trying to get.
I could be done this in 5 minutes.
Your work has to be your own.
I have to turn it in to turnitin.com, right? And then I have to turn it in to you.
Absolutely.
That's petty.
I'm trying to come up with a system that grades papers on its own. I don't even have to do it.
It's gonna just
put it in
automatic.
Is that got to be an app or something out there?
There are some methods where you do something called block grading. Block grading, where some English teachers look at just one or two paragraphs in the whole paper and then grade. There was a technique that I saw being used in the public school. And this was a number of years ago. This was around 2005, 2006. But I'd never adopted it because I wanted to hear my students' voice and I wanted to see how all their paragraphs came together. So I didn't respect that technique, but there were some teachers that were using that.
And do you follow sports at all? Are you?
Not a whole lot. I mean,
you're too busy working. Is that what that is?
Correct, correct. But, you know, I do support, you know, the Penguins and the Steelers and the Pirates.
I'm too busy working to go to the stadium.
It's too cold down there.
I go to the games.
No, if they offer her a job, I guarantee you she's going to be down there and do some development with the players.
Hear that, Steelers and the Pirates, we need a sponsorship too.
Yes, yes. Buy the books.
So you wanted words of wisdom.
Yes, one
so
last
I would
words
say for all the educators that are listening today, keep doing a great job and just get to know your students, learn from them, appreciate them. And the most enjoyable thing for me as an educator is when my students contact me after they've graduated. And they email me, they find me, they don't even know exactly where I am, but they find me on the web and they call me to meet them for lunch or to go to church with them. But I would also like to support parents today. A lot of parents are working hard to provide for their families, and I would encourage them to stay involved with their children and to try to attend as many school events as possible. And I would encourage schools to have more community supported events, empowering students to be the best they can be in respect of career and college ready.
Sir, any last words?
You know what I'm going to say.
I know.
It's always going to be to embrace your pettiness. It's a really good thing. It actually helps people learn you better.
That's funny. Well, Dr. Rubick, we appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule and discussing this wonderful topic with us.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you for your hospitality and things. And
absolutely.
Hopefully you enjoyed the podcast.
My pleasure.
Awesome. So we want to close out with today's lesson. Today's lesson is dream big. The issue when I'm finding out is a lot of people are dreaming too small and thinking too small. When you think about your goals and the things that you want in life, I want you to dream big. I want you to dream bigger than what you can possibly imagine. Because once you dream big and you go out there and you put in that work and hustle and go after it, you never know what can happen. This podcast would have never happened if I didn't think big and just went out on a limb and reached out to Dr. Rubick and you know, made things happen so we have a wonderful discussion. The road trip out to Detroit and Chicago would have never happened. All of the stuff the Empowerment Perspective is about would have never happened if we were, you know, dreaming and thinking small. So please, please encourage yourself and your children to think big. Stop thinking small-minded. The world is bigger than the block that you live on, and there's a lot of opportunity out there. You just got to go get it. So on behalf of the Empowerment Perspective group, stay empowered. Yes.